Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 36. On this episode, we talk The Lego Movie, finally. It came out earlier this year. We missed it, but we're fixing that now. Joining me will be Mark Wingerter, regular of the show. Everyone knows Mark. And a first-time guest, Joe Darnell. Joe's from Movieology and the Movie Bite podcast, and we've been bantering back and forth, and we finally found a good fit for him, so he joins us as well. Lots of podcast experience on this one, so hopefully we won't let you down for one of the biggest and probably best movies of 2014. It's got an incredible cast, incredible director, writer, Phil Lord, Chris Miller, the guys who brought you Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the 21 and 22 Jump Street movies, work on this, and we end up getting a movie about toys that tells you not to buy toys, which makes you want to go buy toys. So, it addresses consumer culture, it addresses reconciliation, we talk utopia versus dystopia, and that mystery third option that might be the best. And I think we rounded out with a conversation about the false idea of just believing and how that's almost the only thing that kind of leaves us hanging in this movie for all its good. So we hit a listener question that takes us down a great path, and we probably get stuck on how much we like this movie more often than we should, but it is all worth it. So here it is, episode 36. The Lego Movie and the Man Upstairs. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless.
But money.
And I wish everything was awesome with money, but everything is not awesome.
Everything is not awesome.
Yeah. So.
Some things are awesome.
Some things are awesome. But actually, things and things. Those are just two awesome things. I should probably read the lyrics down. So did you ever end up buying the song, Joe?
Oh, remind me which song it was again,
because everything else awesome.
Everything is awesome.
No, actually, honestly, I never got around to downloading it.
Well, I feel like you can listen to it so many places.
Well, what I realized was by the third time I watched the movie, I had it kind of memorized. So
even the rap part?
Yes. Oh, I would just go to my theater and turn on Apple TV and play the credits whenever I needed to get a kick. That's how I get to the music. But actually, I do need to download the soundtrack now that I think about it. I want that soundtrack.
It's pretty great. It's everything about the movie is clever. Everything.
Yeah.
Everything is awesome.
Everything is awesome.
Well, everything is clever and everything is charming, and that's really hard to pull off.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially in a movie that, like we said, we were mentioning a little while back, that it should be like Transformers, right? It should be basically a commercial for toys, and it actually ends up not being a commercial for toys. It tells you not to go buy toys, even though you're still going to go buy toys.
It ends up not being a commercial for the toys, which makes me want to go buy the toys. See how that works? It's very meta.
Yeah.
Very meta.
Yeah, usually it's the toys and the productions, the movies, the television shows that are made for each other. So the toys lead children back to the cartoons so that the cartoons will make more money off of commercial ads on their program. And then the bounce back is that the television show leads kids back to the toys. But what's really cool about Lego is, like y'all guys just said, that it's sort of like the toys that wound up in the Toy Story movies. Like Mr. Potato Head was okay on his own. The Slinky Dog was okay on his own. Remember that Play School microphone cassette recorder that they called in the first film? Like, that was a really good toy. And I remember him when I was a kid. And then when he showed up in the movie and brought to life, it was like, yeah, that makes total sense. If anything, I think some of the loose screws for characters, though there weren't many, if there were any loose screws, they were the characters that were fictionalized and just created up and made up toys for the movie itself. But usually the toys that were from real life were well executed because they gave them a lot of homage and like a lot of respect. for their other creators that came up with those toys.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about movies now is, especially with CGI and everything kind of making the possibilities limitless, is that a lot of the filmmakers now are hearkening back to an age where they grew up in an age sort of where we grew up, you know, kind of in the 70s, 80s, 90s, where, you know, toys were, you know, you didn't have the CGI movies, you didn't have these big epic blockbusters, you didn't have video games to the degree that we have them now. It was more imagination, and the toys were so cool back then. And so you kind of have, you know, imaginations that ring true to that era that are making movies now. So you get really cool things like that, like the microphone from Toy Story, and giving it a personality, because we all gave it personality when we were kids. And so that's, you know, that's
the magic of Toy Story.
The magic of Toy Story. Well, it's the magic of toys and imagination in general. And I mean, especially when you make a movie like the Lego Movie, I mean, it's like the possibilities are limitless. And so if you have worked with that limitless imagination, I mean, you're going to make a really cool movie, probably.
Speaking of which, Joe, did you guys actually review Ninja Turtles?
We did. What's funny is that the subject of the relationship between the toys and the movie was really nothing to discuss there, because neither TJ or I had much to do with Ninja Turtles when we were kids.
Interesting.
How about y'all?
Oh, yeah. I had lots of turtle things.
Oh, yeah. I loved the movies. I played the video game.
Oh, yeah.
My cousin had more Turtles toys than I did, but we'd always play with the turtles together and...
Yeah,
My thing was always Transformers and G.I. Joes all the way. I just didn't have time for the Turtles.
See, I didn't really have any Transformers. I had a lot. G.I. Joe was my big thing. So I was primarily in that kind of realm. And then I would cruise the toy aisle for a new, like, figurine of some sort, like from a movie or something. And so I always had a collection of those that I played with. But, I loved the Turtles pizza thrower. Van was great. Just shooting those
had the turtle
pizzas.
Blimp.
And the blimp. I didn't have the blimp. My cousin had the blimp. That was great.
It was great.
Really great.
So that's the thing.
See, I had the general. The G.I. Joe general.
So did I.
Yeah.
I had the space shuttle.
Really?
Space shuttle.
Mind blown.
Yeah, I had the space shuttle. I remember that.
I was like, this is
the
coolest
thing. I still
got
around here somewhere.
Really?
Yeah, I think ours, bits and pieces.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think ours was in bits and pieces and ended up going the way of the buffalo. Unfortunately,
You know what? My cousin from Greensboro, he did the exact same thing with all of his toys. He went into the backyard and buried them. I do not know why.
What?
He had like all the Transformers, he had all the G.I. Joes, he had all the Ninja Turtles, and for some unexplainable reason, when he went from his childhood into adolescence, his puberty, he went into the backyard and buried all of his toys in random places in the backyard. And I was like, why did you do this? Why didn't you give it to me?
Is he the man upstairs?
He was like the bad kid. He was Sid.
Wow.
Oh, gosh.
That's
terrible.
Was
I was going to say, G.I. Joe was probably my thing, but at the same time, like, maybe it's because of the way my dad was when he was young, but Christmas was huge for us. Like,
yeah, me too.
We were never really well-to-do. But it was not odd for me and my brother individually to get hundreds of dollars worth of stuff for Christmas, or maybe even more than that. I don't know what the inflation rate is, but
right. Like
if we got Ninja Turtle stuff, that Christmas we probably got all of the Ninja Turtle stuff. So, or you know, like if we got Transformers, like we got tons of Transformers, and so we had a ton of stuff of all kinds. And so toy movies, I'm usually willing to give almost all of them a chance, because kind of like Mark was pointing out earlier, there's a little piece of my childhood. And that's who they're making the movies for. Even though there's a new generation that they're trying to sell the toys to, they know that if you can strike a chord with the parent on some way, the parents are going to take them and see the movies too. And they're going to take their kids and they're going to want to share that with their kids. And there's some magic there, which the Lego Movie hits on. Which the Transformers movies do not hit on.
No,
you know.
Actually, now that I think about it, the original film to capitalize on toy memorabilia was Star Wars. And Now, it doesn't really get much credit for it because whenever the subject comes up, it's some capitalist talking about how brilliant George Lucas was for keeping all the rights to the merchandise. But if you think about it from the collector standpoint, or the just the child that grew up and, you know, kept some of the toys around for old time's sake, it was Star Wars that kind of kicked it all off. It was the original movie that was a huge commercial for the products. And and then if you think about it, you know, it kind of came full circle again when in the late 90s you have the Star Wars toys that came out of nowhere. I guess it was around 96 or so. And then about a year later or so, they announced the special edition, and they had all these toys leading up to it. And by then, everybody was reliving, you know, their childhood by buying the toys for their kids and, you know, the next generation of kids that were enjoying Star Wars. And it now has kind of gone around the loop now a couple of more times since the late 90s.
Well, I mean, the prequels have been often maligned as basically just like things to throw new toys in. You know, like when you make when George Lucas made a scene, like what toy can I put in this scene? You know, what thing can I have that appeals to? I mean, that's a pretty major criticism besides just being bad movies. That the
Do we know if George Lucas actually collects any of those toys? Because we know he makes them, but
I mean, for all of his making of material,
I've never seen that he has a collection of any of his figures.
Yeah, he's never being interviewed in a room where he's got like a whole bunch of his own like stuff that he's really proud of. He's not like. You would imagine like Guillermo del Toro or something like that, you know, sitting in a room. He's got like Jaegers behind him and stuff.
That's right.
He didn't really strike me as that. He's like, well, I'm really rich right now. I don't really care because you're going to go see it because it has Star Wars name on it. So that's great.
If he wanted to, he could literally buy all of the toys that have ever existed from every collector. He's that rich.
Oh, it's sad. Well, let's... It's a great toy conversation.
It is a great toy conversation.
But at some point tonight, we have to talk about the Lego Movie. That's unfortunately.
Right. Oh, jeez.
This movie that we just didn't
what
like.
What a bummer.
Yeah, I know. Well, and this is...
Okay, so grown-ups. What's going on here?
Exactly. What is it? This kid's movie? This stupid kid's movie? I guess that's the thing, though. We, on Real World Theology, typically do newer movies. We missed doing the Lego Movie earlier this year, mainly because... the track record that toy movies have. It looked like it probably wasn't going to be done super well. People really hadn't put two and two together with the Phil Lord, Chris Miller combination, having a lot of success with Cloudy and Chance of Meatballs with 21 Jump Street. They weren't household names at that point, so that really didn't catch a lot of people's eyes. It wasn't until after this movie came out, and I had actually selected to do another movie that had, I think it was The Monuments Men at the time, had, you know, tons of stars. I was like, surely this will make more money. The Lego Movie was huge, and we missed it. So I'm glad that things have kind of slowed down. There are some things out there that you could see in the theater now, but this is the perfect time to go back and check out this movie. And I'm glad that we're making time to do it.
Yeah.
So... we're going to be talking Lego Movie. The odd thing is, the description of this movie is an ordinary Lego construction worker, thought to be the prophesied special, is recruited to join a quest to stop an evil tyrant from gluing the Lego universe into eternal stasis. The reason that's funny is because even the synopsis uses the word Lego over and over, but the movie never does.
Never once.
The word Lego was never used inside the movie. By any of the characters. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so great.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things as an audience member I didn't quite catch, but then someone told me and I went, you know, upon my second or third or fourth, however many times we've, you know, seen this movie now, I kept like, really? They never say it. And it's because Phil Lord and Chris Miller bring this world to life. And it doesn't hurt that they have tons of acting talent, lots of voice talent in this. Chris Pratt, I think right now, has basically jumped along the same journey that Phil Lord and Chris Miller have. You know, some people knew Chris Pratt from Parks and Rec, but after this year, you know, between the Lego Movie and Guardians of the Galaxy, and the fact that he's got Jurassic World coming out next year, he's probably the next hot thing. And Phil Lord, Chris Miller... They had Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, they had 21 Jump Street, but with the Lego Movie, and then the subsequent success of 22 Jump Street, they are now, like, if they touch anything, people will be like, oh my gosh, they're doing it, I will totally go see it. So, But you got Will Arnett, Elizabeth Banks, Will Ferrell, Alison Brie, Nick Offerman, Liam Neeson, and Morgan Freeman as Vitruvius. Oh, yeah.
This is his first animated film.
First animated film.
For Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. Oddly enough. So, I mean, you have tons of voice talent. I think we all really enjoyed it. It was one of the reasons it wasn't hard to find people to come on and talk about it, even kind of late notice. So, even though I may have spoiled it just a little bit by saying we all obviously enjoyed it, you know, Joe, did you enjoy this movie?
Yeah. Spoiler alert, I give it 5 for 5 stars. This is an awesome film. Oh, is this a show? I should say, hi, this is Joe Darnell.
Well,
here I am.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I mean,
and
so,
to my right is Mike Fizier, and to my left is Mark.
Yeah. All virtually. We're virtually.
You're spiritual right and left.
That's right. Well, so Joe, what were some of the things about this movie that just made you really like what made you enjoy it so much?
Well, first of all, I find it really odd. I guess I am one of these oddballs that like can judge a movie by its trailer, because time and again, there's somebody who will tell me, oh, that film looks like it's going to be really good. I saw the trailer and I'm totally sold on a ticket. But then I check it out and I'm like, it doesn't look so hot to me. And sure enough, at least for what I enjoy about a movie, I'm usually right just by gauging the trailer, and vice versa. When someone wants to say, you know what? Here is a dumb-looking, silly, comical, lame kids movie. It's called The Lego Movie, and it seems so out there and egotistical for the Lego brand to create a glorification of their own product, and it's going to be just loaded with commercialism and probably fart jokes to boot. You know, it's going to be geared to 8-year-olds. And I'm like, you know what, guys? Did we see the same trailer? Because this movie looks like it's going to be fantastic. And I knew, like, with every frame of the movie, just listening to the outrageous beginning and the build up when it gave Vitruvius his actions hero scene, and he is like, "You can't get past me. My eyes see everything. Oh, my eyes!" Like, for the very first gag, it was perfect. It was perfect. And even Morgan Freeman's delivery was so cool. Like, I have seen Morgan Freeman's knock out some great performances, but something he brought to the table here could have only been fueled by the direction. And I also have to say that I am really ecstatic about the direction for this film, because I don't think that this is just a product of the Lego business's commitment to creativity and, you know, self-control and creating a beautiful, you know, logical product. This is a culmination of culture as we know it in a really, really good way. And it just doesn't happen every day. There is not many films that work on the same level as this movie, because practically every gag works. Practically every character works. And there's not 1 minute of the movie that I felt didn't belong, which is so rare.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think?
I was going to say, there are very few things that don't reward repeat viewings.
Yeah.
And there's so few movies like that.
Yeah.
But Mark, what was it that jumped out for you?
Well, it's almost like it was kind of like follow up on what you were saying is, Joe, is that it's kind of like Lego did a really good thing by letting these guys make just a good movie and not a Lego product movie. Because, I mean, they really, in doing so, paid more homage to Lego itself and everything that Lego can be in that imagination than just, like, doing a Transformers movie and making, like, you know, actual cars, you know, turn into a Transformer. And so that was what was so great, is that this was just a really good movie that was really zany and fun and, like, all very, very smart, very, very smart humor, very, like you said, all the gags worked, everything worked. I mean, it was really just, it was just beat after beat. It was like just nonstop funny and exhilarating and clever, mm-hmm. super clever. I mean, it's part of the repeat viewings thing is like you don't realize how clever this movie is until probably your fourth or fifth viewing because there's so much that they loaded in here and they took every frame. Interestingly enough, the animation is all CGI, but it looks like stop motion. Mm-hmm. And in order to take the care of making stop motion, you have to make sure everything is perfect in the frame. And it's like they, instead of just making a CGI movie because, sure, we could animate Legos, yeah. you know, they made it, they took the care with it. They made it every frame interesting and hearkening back to something from Lego or culture or something. And so just the fact that everything weaves together and then just the story of like it actually being a child, which I was in real life, a real person like handling on and making the story go like we would do in real life with our Legos, which I was totally not expecting at all.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I don't think pretty much anybody was, which is another good thing about the marketing. They kind of had that as a secret. It was a wonderful secret.
Which is so rare in trailers.
Very rare. Yeah, very rare, because you usually get the whole movie. And that was one of the things, like, I had that reaction to the trailer. I was like, I mean, okay, you know, it looks like a fun animated movie, I guess, but, you know, like, if you go on IMDb and they give you, like, oh, people who like this movie also liked, and it's just, like, every animated movie that's ever been made in the past, you know, 3 or 4 years, like, you know, I look at something like The Croods, and I just have no interest in it, because it doesn't look smart. And to me, for whatever reason, the Lego movie just didn't look, it just looked like fun and maybe something I could catch on video when it got out of the theaters. But I was surprised and delightfully surprised by the fact that that this movie was just so wonderful. Everything was awesome.
Everything was awesome.
Yeah. It was just really, I mean, it was just really, really well done. And that was unexpected. And then it had like this really perfect, like, hits you at the heart of being a child, which was not, you know, that from the trailer you didn't get that, wasn't expecting that, and so that's what made it really rich for me. So I just thoroughly enjoyed it. It's one of the best, I think, is easily can be said one of the best blockbusters of the year.
Yeah, I would also say that, echoing what both of you saw in the trailer, that the trailer kind of had me hooked. I heard an announcement about a Lego movie. Like I said, at the time, wasn't really on board with, you know, Phil Lord, Chris Miller, and what they'd done. I hadn't put two and two together. And I said, you know, I can't imagine any way that you can make a Lego movie good. Mm-hmm. Huh. But that trailer sure looks like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so maybe we'll go see it. Maybe it'll be some, you know, maybe it'll be some fun. And, you know, we'll get a piece or two out of it, but it'll probably be like a so-so movie, and people who love Legos will love it a little bit more than the average person.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big Lego head. I mean, I had Legos when I was a kid. I played with Legos, but, you know, we've got buddies that are huge Lego heads, and I think it's great. I just was never was when I was a kid. It wasn't the bigger part. I was more, like we were talking about earlier, the G.I. Joe guy, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. But I think part of what was playing into all that, the trailer and everything, was the kind of Legoing of a lot of things. Like, yep. you know, you've had the whole video game series of Lego Indiana Jones, Lego Star Wars, Lego Batman. And so it kind of looked like, oh, well, the natural next thing to do is just make a movie. So you've got, you know, and I've played some of those video games. I've played the Lego Batman, and I've played Lego Indiana Jones, and they were fun. But it was just kind of like, that's an okay game. It's sort of fun. It's Lego-y.
It's like
clever.
Gimmicky.
It's gimmicky, but it was clever. I mean, it was, you know, it's a clever video game series, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think they're a blast. So I kind of felt like this movie was just kind of the same thing. Oh, they're throwing a bunch of Lego stuff into a movie. It'll be just a, you know, like a fun little comedy film, animated film. But just blown away by how smart it was, and that they were allowed to do it. It's almost like they're getting away with, you know, with you know, something bad. You know, it's like, oh, we get to actually make a good movie out of this. You're kidding.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I mean, when you're talking about a smart movie, like, it wasn't until I saw it once and then I was kind of blown away, because it's really hard for me. I sometimes go into movies with high expectations or low expectations, and that will base how much I enjoy the movie. And I think lots of people do that. Mm-hmm. So at first I was like, I have pretty low expectations. And so I was like, maybe it wasn't as great as I thought it was. It's just way better than my expectations. But then you start looking at some of the trivia, look at some of the fun things that I might have missed. And I noticed something like Vitruvius was a Roman author and architect in the first century BC, best known for his multi-volume work entitled De Architectura Entomologicalia. Yeah, I can't pronounce anything. Just know he wrote something really Latin-sounding. Okay. Yeah. So, and the word architect derives from Greek words meaning master and builder. So basically, ooh, Vitruvius, you know, like, who's more, you know, Morgan Freeman's character in this movie. Oh, we're going to spoil everything, by the way. I mean, if you haven't seen Lego Movie by now, you should have already seen it, but it's amazing. Yeah. So I think we've covered that part. So go see the movie. And now we're going to spoil the rest of it if there's anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, Vitruvius is this main character, and he's the one kind of, you know, gathering the master builders. And they didn't just give him some random name, like, you know, Bob the Builder. You know, they give
him... I saw how that worked out of your brain right there. That was,
You know, they gave him this specific name, Vitruvius, who was one person who was known for writing the book on building, you know?
Well, not to be a wet blanket on your idea there for their brilliant craftsmanship, but I have to point out that we have Emmett, the construction worker.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. It works perfectly because he is supposed to be the most basic thing.
Yeah, yeah, he is your Bob the Builder.
Because I love the fact that his last name is Burkowski.
Yeah.
I was like, that's the greatest last name. You know, so like, so they make him, like, they give him a name. Everyone, you know, almost everyone in this film is not, it's not taken lightly. Everywhere they could put something that was well thought out, they crammed it in there.
The meaning of the name Emmett is entire or all embracing.
All embracing.
And Emmett is an everyman character. Boom!
Mind blown.
Well, of course.
I would say, I'd say the first thing that really jumped out at me, and we already all love this song, okay, Everything is Awesome.
Yeah.
And we can't stop singing it. Actually, what it reminds me of is, for those people out there, and I don't know how many there will be in this particular audience, but when, in South Park the movie, when they go watch the foreign Canadian film, and Terrence and Phillip, like, have all these songs and all the kids like, come out of the theater and they're all just singing the songs and they sing the songs all day. They sing it in class. They sing it at home. They sing it walking down the street. I was like, that is Everything is Awesome. Yeah, everyone coming out of this movie was singing Everything is Awesome.
Yeah.
And then the next day, everybody was Facebooking Everything is Awesome. Hashtag.
That's right.
You know?
So, I mean, and it's super catchy, but what it did was we kind of mentioned this before the show. We almost didn't want to like the song because the whole premise of Everything is Awesome is pointing out how consumeristic like our culture is.
Yeah.
You know, this concept that in a movie about a product, they're talking about how products are distracting and we shouldn't get caught up in buying products. And they do that, you know, President Business does that with Where Are My Pants?
Yeah,
that TV show that everyone watches.
Yes,
he does it with the show. He distracts them with Taco Tuesday, and I love getting on this bandwagon, especially when they don't actually mention sports. Since sports is my thing that I let myself get distracted by.
Yeah.
But, well, you notice that in one of the opening scenes when Emmett's like driving through the city, there's a great big billboard for sports, and it just says sports across it with like an athletic dude on it. You can't tell if he's a football player or a hockey player or what, but it's just they're promoting the idea of sports.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and this whole concept of like, Where Are My Pants, like that TV show, it's cool and it's frustrating. I mean, part of the concept of real world theology is we're trying to get people to examine what they're watching, why they're watching, and what they're getting from it.
Right.
Well, and that's what happened in the movie too, is because they called into question your consumerism early on. Like, should you be okay with the price of your hot beverage being, you know, $30-some, you know?
Awesome.
Just, you know, be cheerful, be okay with that. Be okay with whatever kind of modern consumer product that life throws at you. But then what was funny is after calling into question and throwing it in your face, then the rest of the movie starts to reintroduce the things about our culture that have been delivered to you as consumables, as products, and reintroducing them to you in ways that you should enjoy with a new appreciation. Like just the idea of like Legos in general. They give you a whole new appreciation for these toys. And then you have a whole new appreciation for Well, frankly, for kids' films in general. But then the other thing you have an appreciation for is just like the superheroes and particularly Batman. Like that was a great case in point where I think that Batman has become more and more so an adult icon. Like he is your dark, mysterious, broody adult man's hero. And less and less so what the kids are attracted to, which, you know, usually involves laser guns and toy guns and shooting people. And that's what kids are like naturally drawn to. You want to fight. And Batman just wants to nab the bad guys. I'm not saying that kids don't like Batman, but what I'm saying is that in a whole new way, they made Batman accessible to kids again, whereas the most popular versions of Batman have been directed towards the mature American or you know, Western civilized adult.
I was going to continue on that, just say, because it's interesting because the way that they make him more fun is point out all of the caricatureness of Batman and what he's kind of become with the Batman voice, you know, and just kind of the like, I'm awesome, like, because I'm Batman, you know, like, and
he's picking his teeth with a batarang at one point.
So it's like they definitely just, you know, point out the caricatures of Batman and really point poke fun at him, and I really liked that they did that and kind of like put him in a world with a whole bunch of other of these icons that they also made fun of but also celebrated at the same time, you know. And so it's the great thing that they did was they took the imagination of the inherent imagination that it takes to create with Legos and just did that. They didn't, you know, make it a Lego thing. They didn't say this is what's awesome about Legos. They showed instead of told. Show don't tell. That's a rule in writing. but it's interesting because, you know, they could have like another kind of going back to like why this movie is awesome is. They could have just put this in, oh, this is set in Legoland, and Legoland is cool, and this is what we do, but it's a dystopia, you know? They went dark with this. They went to a place of, like, a dystopian fiction, where you have an oppressive regime. I mean, like, this is a really serious stuff that they're dealing with here in a very light and fun way, and it kind of sets it up to... For the stakes to be real, and you know, if you're a Lego, you don't want your Lego to not work. You know, like you don't want your Lego guys to be super glued by the crackle. You know, and the idea of this president business and this overarching corporation that controls everything, fascinating. I mean, I never would have expected something so kind of heavy and serious of a theme to be. I mean, you could pull themes out of all kinds of animated films, but usually they're much more lighthearted that they don't go and tackle that very, very serious thing. So in a way, they take something like Batman, who is often very serious and very dramatic and very dangerous, and kind of make him into a caricature, and then they take something that could have been easily a caricature or just fun and zany and make it very serious, and they go into very deep themes. And so that's which I'm sure we can continue talking about.
Well, it's that dystopian theme that it's not totally dark, and it's not too well, it's over the top enough where the stakes are real in the movie, but it doesn't take itself quite as seriously as most, especially, I mean, we've talked dystopian so many times this year. Mm-hmm. Dystopian is so in right now.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about it so many times, but it finds a way to do it and then contrast it, because it's not just the fact that President Business or Lord Business is running this dystopian thing that is eerily familiar to our present day, kind of pointing out how, depending on how we go through life, we might already be in a dystopia, we just don't know it. But it takes that, and it takes the Octane Corporation in general, and what it pushes, and it compares it to what, hypothetically, I especially think our culture would assume is a utopia.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Cloud Cuckoo Land.
Yeah,
and this is another one of those places where I feel like the movie rewards diving deeper into where these jokes come from, because Aristophanes in 414 BC wrote in The Birds, where in this book, Mr. Trusting and Mr. Hopeful erect a perfect city in the clouds to be named Cloud Cuckoo Land, an unrealistically idealistic state where everything is perfect. And then, of course, in this movie, we have Cloud Cuckoo Land.
Wait, this is written when?
In 414 BC.
414 BC.
Exactly.
Cloud Cuckoo Land.
Yep.
Wow.
I
did not know that.
So, and in the movie, we have, Princess Unikitty, land up in the clouds. So it's basically taking on, like, so we have a joke within a joke. Within the larger frame of the movie, which is a joke.
Yeah,
Cleopatra is there at the first scene of Cloud Cuckoo Land. And, of course, she isn't just a kitty. She's a unicorn kitty.
That's right. And because why not?
Can I say the line that she says there at the beginning?
Oh, yeah.
Here in Cloud Cuckoo Land, there are no rules. There's no government, no babysitters, no bedtimes, no frowny faces, no bushy mustaches, and no negativity of any kind.
You just said no like 1,000 times.
And there's also no consistency.
No consistency.
Yeah. I mean, she goes like, any idea is a good idea except the non-happy ones. Those we push down deep inside where you'll never, ever, ever,
ever find them.
Find them. We were watching some of the clips right before the show. I mean, and it's so great. But at the same time, I would say that when we get to Cloud Cuckoo Land and she Unikitty shows us this utopia,
mm-hmm.
which we're like, oh, finally, our good guys have got to the good place. Well, Emmett's like, there's no signs. How do you know what to do? What's going on?
How do you know what not to do?
I mean, and obviously, because Unikitty is so over the top, we can see that maybe Cloud Cuckoo Land isn't as perfect as it seems. But it's great that we have these two really, really contrasting worldviews, because I think those two worldviews are what often fight each other in the world we see now. We have, the people who are, big business, like, you need rules and structure and everything has to be done this way and you have to love this particular type of thing and it's about, product or whatever. Then you have the other side. It's like, no, I don't need rules. I need freedom and no restraints and just to be yourself mm-hmm. and just,
While you're talking about it, you really are hitting on something, because all of the heroes in the Lego Society Dream Worlds are celebrities. You get to the council in the Doghead.
Yeah.
And all the master builders are superheroes and athletes and cartoon characters.
Important
and then
historical
some.
Figures. Yeah.
Well, yeah, as long as they're interesting historical figures, like Cleopatra again, something that the world has idolized. You won't find just everyday important people that are otherwise going without any, thanks or gratitude. No thankless people are there. There's no Mother Teresa's, because as much as the world has tried to popularize her, people don't really find her that interesting. And the same thing goes for your moms and dads that are raising their children right, or school teachers that are educating your children right. There isn't there is no everyman there. And there is no poor man there. There is no anyone like that. You just don't find that. I'm actually surprised that, they could have explored this idea more, but I think they made the point very clearly. Like, those celebrities, that crowd, the master builders, are people that are all very independent from one another. They are all their unique individuality. And what they contribute to society is that they inspire us and they make their living off of us in a way that we are okay with, that we're happy with. They're not trying to, formulate some master evil plan like Taco Tuesday. And they're not trying to win our favor illegitimately like Lord Business is with Taco Tuesday and Where Are My Pants. They're trying to give you something that you genuinely enjoy and they work real hard at it to do it. But then at the same time, there's a catch-22 that how much of what they do is a reflection of what our society wants our heroes to be versus a real contribution that they are making to society that's actually meaningful and helpful. Like Emmett, the guy who is the everyman, is actually making a difference in, you know, saving the world. He's actually putting a dent in the universe. And the celebrities don't know how to do that very well.
Yeah, well, it makes an interesting that's an interesting parallel to kind of like the two worlds again, like just kind of saying that everybody's kind of got their ideology and how they want things to be, and some people are going to go and be, you know, like Emmett is at the beginning of the movie, he's going to be, he was like, everything is awesome, I love this song, I love what I do, and you know, we as the outsiders, the audience, see, you know, what you're doing is not the best thing that can happen to you. You don't realize how structured and kind of a slave he is at that point. But then you have Cloud Cuckoo Land, where there are no rules and everything is just awesome in a different way because you can do whatever you want, and that's the rule of the day. But I think what something we had briefly talked about before the show, Fizz, was that, you know, these things are parallels to very distinct things in culture, but very distinct things in Christian culture, where you have kind of this idea of denominations that say, well, we believe this certain thing and not this certain thing, and if you're this type of person, then that's what we're looking for, and this is not what we're looking for. But then you have the ones that are like, we're non-denominational, which means we have no rules, except that we have a rule that there's no rule, and then there's no consistency, you know. Which Fizz, you could probably make a better point of that than I'm trying to
over
that
right now. And not to, you know, rain on anyone's parade who is a part of a non-denominational, you know, church, you know.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's,
I want to say non-denomination, denomination, but right. You know, it's, you know, one of the
I'm just making parallels.
Yeah, we're having these really great discussions. It just so happens right now, you know, what's the purpose of a non-denominational church? And most people would say, you know, you're not restraining yourself by all these rules or things that you know, you don't want or you don't need because they're restrictive. And while I think that you can have good in almost anything, the more and more I go through life, I've found beauty in restriction. I think once you understand the truths of how the world works, it frees you to really live a life that is impactful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would never advocate anyone being a slave to something. And this is one of the things that especially Christianity has wrestled with for a really long time. The world saying that slavery is bad, and slavery being a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
at least man's version of slavery, but Paul especially calling us to be like slaves of Christ over and over and over again,
mm-hmm.
and how slavery can be a beautiful thing, you know, because we're all going to be slaves to something.
Right.
And if you're slaves to Wear My Pants and Taco Tuesday, you're probably not living a fulfilling life.
Right.
You're thinking you're free from slavery because you don't have liturgy at your church, then you're really a slavery to your own concept of freedom. You know, and so the biggest thing is knowing what you're a slave to and living the truth of that out. And that's a really delicate balance. And it's one of those things that I'm like, I guess you realize what you're doing when you're making the Lego movie. Because you're putting two things, two very different ways of thinking, up against each other and saying, you know what? Emmett actually falls in the middle somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he finds the best in the one world, but once he, you know, kind of breaks free of that a little, he doesn't fully embrace the Cloud Cuckoo side, the Master Builder side. He kind of merges those worlds into a third way. And the third way is what we often refer to as what, you know, Christ comes to do. You know, he's not left or right. He's, you know, the perfect middle, you know.
In a sense, I'm thinking about how Emmett is, thank you, he is a little bit of a slave to the idea of the prophecy. And at the beginning, he doesn't feel like he has purpose, but he wants to matter to his culture at large. And then he discovers that his culture at large doesn't even notice he's there. And so right then, when he needed to hear it most, you know, this, you know, Wildstyle comes along and tells him, you are the one in the prophecy. You are the most wonderful, awesome being there ever would be. And, you know, that's you, right? And he's like, oh, I really want to hear this. So yeah, I guess yeah. So. But then she also is telling him, like, okay, well, since that is you have a responsibility to fulfill. You're going to save the world, which freaks him out. But then later on, you know, to counterbalance this, you know, Vitruvius tells him, you know, that prophecy isn't actually true. But it is also really important that you basically do what I made up in the prophecy said anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's this relationship, this unspoken relationship between Emmett and, spoiler alert, Finn, and that idea that Finn really wants Emmett to be able to fulfill the prophecy. And by that time that comes around, it no longer becomes a burden like we usually think slavery would be. We think of slavery as a burden, but what is unique from Paul's perspective isn't that slavery is a burden, but slavery to God himself is actually a huge privilege. And I think that that's where Emmett is coming from. At least, you know, it's not spoken. It's not like the movie is an intentional allegory. Leastways, I don't think so.
Yeah, right.
But then again, we can talk about that later. But it sure seems to me that by the time that Emmett is sent back into the Lego world, he considers it a privilege that he can save their world, and he knows how to. And you know, that means that he is actually valuable to his culture, and that he gets it now. He's got to do what he does to save the world.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that, you know, this idea of everything is awesome. You know, at the beginning of the film, you know, to Emmett, it's just normal life. It's a good thing. But we see, oh man, this is not how life should be. And to say that, you know, if you look at the lyrics of the song, they're really interesting because it says everything is awesome, everything is cool when you're part of a team, everything is awesome when we're living our dream, you know, and it goes into this whole kind of like, well, it has an interesting attitude, but at the beginning of the film, everything is awesome is a bad thing. Everything is awesome is just like, just accept everything because if you don't, we're going to kill you. But, Taco Tuesdays, you know, so at the beginning, it's one thing. It's one very distinct bad thing, and at the end, everything is awesome is redeemed because there's a lot of redemption in this movie, and specifically with Emmett, what Emmett does redeems the idea of everything is awesome because everything is awesome is an ideology that has seeds of the truth, but when it's in the context of a dystopian world where you have to live this way or else, it becomes a bad thing. But when you read on, once Emmett reveals in the end that, you know, everybody has the ability to create and be special and you don't have to oppress, and, you know, the kind of the message that we get of the story, and everybody kind of starts to see outside of their own construct to kind of the outside world and the impact that an individual like an everyman can make. Everything is awesome becomes, you know, when you look at it, it's like, let's see what I was going to pull out. Everything is better when we stick together side by side. You and I are going to win forever. Let's party forever. We're the same. I'm like you. You're like me. We're all working in harmony. And then you start to see like what they're trying to say with, I feel more awesome than an awesome possum, dip my body in chocolate frost, and 3 years later, washing off the frost and smelling like a blossom, everything is awesome. And it's like, stepped in mud, got new brown shoes. I mean, like, these are really cool ideas, you know? I mean, it's not just this, you don't think of it as just like this, like, we're, you know, put into this fascist team. Like, we're deciding to take things as like, the world is okay. You know, we can like, if I step in mud, my day's not ruined. I have new brown shoes. You know, it's like, cool. I mean, there's all these like little things that I think, you know, when we see the story of a guy who sacrifices himself so that even the worst guy can be redeemed, then you are redeemed from your idea. Like, your ideology becomes something completely different, even though it kind of has the same truth that it always had.
Well, and that's right. That last idea right there is something that I've seen a lot of people kind of butt heads on, that, you know, Emmett basically deciding to a certain degree, sacrifice himself, so even the worst people can be redeemed. And if you put that in the context of Christianity, we're all for it. But I noticed that if you put that in the context of the movie, there's even a video that, like, like people who are upset that Lord Business does like all these terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he craggles Bad Cop's family. Yeah. He, you know, basically erases the face of Good Cop. He kills Vitruvius.
Mm-hmm.
Like Vitruvius is still dead at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a Leo, but like, you know, he's
becomes
done,
the ghost Leo that glows in the dark.
Yeah. He's, yeah. He's done terrible things. And at the end, there is hope for redemption and reconciliation for Lord Business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of the most powerful concepts in the movie, even if the words they kind of use and the whatnot is a little over-spiritualized and doesn't have as much substance as I think they want it to have, it still gives this concept that there's hope for reconciliation for Lord Business, and people are not accepting it. Like, they want justice. And I don't blame them, but I think it shows how much different, like, or how unfair sometimes grace can be.
Well, now you're also bringing up an issue about the father and son relationship, because it's not just President Business that's on the line here. Really, we're talking about a family relationship as well. Mm-hmm. Emmett doesn't necessarily feel a family relationship pressure, peer pressure, in the Lego world, but certainly Finn does with the man upstairs, because the man upstairs is the inspiration for Lord Business. And it like, even the man upstairs, when he realizes that, it's almost the beginning of his heart change before Finn ever said anything. The potential was that Finn recognized the man upstairs always had the potential to be the greatest guy, you know, and also the most special person in his life. And here, in spite of his father's shortcomings, he has basically introduced his son to the wonderful plethora of creativity with the Lego sets he has in the basement. And Finn undoubtedly would not be the same kid if it weren't for his father. You know, if, in spite of all the bad things that Lord Business is responsible for, he also created that city. He also gave people a relatively decent dystopian to live in. But, you know, in the case of the man upstairs, he raised Finn, and then it was Finn who stood on his shoulders and said, well, Dad, look, you know, I think you can be even better. And, you know, it's okay to be better. You don't have to be this guy who is held back by some, very bad ideas and rules. And not everything has to be in its place, because when you do that, you kill creativity. And you're kind of reining in on my development here, you know. But, thankfully, the film is not coming right out and just saying that. But it's certainly things that we pick up on from the vibe of the film. And that's what makes it more powerful. It's kind of like you said, Mark, Fizz, how the movie doesn't even use the term Lego. It just presupposes that this is a place, and these people are not even aware that they're plastic. It's like the fish in water. He doesn't know he's in water. You know, he doesn't call that into question.
Yeah.
I think this is really good stuff here.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different rules in this movie, and how it's interesting how they play with rules and how rules get changed. Because, like, you know, with the when you do get to the real life with Finn and his dad, you know, he's like, this is not a toy. And he's like, it kind of is a toy. And he's like, no, it's, you know, it's an adult thing. And he's like, well, we got it at a toy store. And it's like the ages say 8 to 14. He's like, that's just a suggestion, you know. Like, he's, you know, it's funny, but, like, he's made his own rules, you know, about how things are supposed to be. And Finn has kind of, like, said, well, maybe there aren't any rules to this.
Yeah. It, well, I mean, and that relationship in and of itself is something I think is well worth exploring, because we have two different dynamics in that, one with Emmett and Lord Business, and then one with Finn and his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best way to start exploring that is with our listener question from Cody Triplett, because he asked this really, really great, almost super deep question. A very great question.
Great question.
he asks, the movie dealt a lot with the minifigure's attitudes toward the man upstairs. How accurate do you think the movie was in representing these attitudes as we see them in the real world in relation to people and God.
Well, it's complicated. I want to interpret his question two different ways. If he is saying, how is it that the man upstairs parallels or represents God the Father, I think he does a poor job of it, because he's not really our man upstairs. He is quite literally just another man like you and I. And I don't think that Lord Business or the man upstairs represents that. He represents, he really just represents us. But from the point of view of the Lego world, he is God the Father. Their world does not have a better deity than the man upstairs, which is interesting, but it only works within the construct of the story, and that's why it's only analogous to a point, and yet it still works. You know, it kind of reminds me of the story about the prodigal son. You know, God, you know, is represented by the Father in that story, and he has two sons, one that turned out pretty bad and foolish, and the other one that stayed at home and did the right thing and then felt like he was owed something. And neither of those sons exactly resemble God's own son. And God only had one son. And in that story, you know, the character that represents the Father has two. You know, there's going to be a point at which even Jesus' own parables break down and don't exactly parallel the Christian worldview. And that's okay. I'm happy with Lord Business and the man upstairs representing the adult everyman that gets nerdy about something. He's particular about how his car is washed and shined, and you know, it's got to be clean on the interior and have that fresh car smell all the time. And no, the kids are not allowed to have chewing gum and fries in the back, you know, whatever it is. And he is seeking perfection. But perfection in his image, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But when it spoils the love relationship with your son, it is spoiling something that matters a great deal more than your spiffy car.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you're trying to look for this to be a straight parallel, then you're probably kind of out of luck. But what I think it does tell us is if we look at these the minifigures or the people in the actual Lego people and how they are basically Finn's imagination. Most children will understand who God is by looking at their father.
Right.
And like Joe, you've already pointed out, a man is often a terrible example, but he can also be a great example in certain cases. And in this case with Finn, I think he sees the good in him, but he also fears the things that he doesn't agree with.
Yeah, and Finn is at that tipping point in his own maturity and adolescence where he can recognize that. He's old enough to recognize that, but not old enough to be a real argumentative, confrontational, you know, difficult, rebellious son.
Well, we have to remember, you know, the thing that you tend to forget about this movie is that the whole story is from the mind of Finn.
Yeah.
And that is why it's so hilarious.
yeah, it is. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, his idea of his father is put into the story as the overarching villain.
Mm-hmm.
And so if what you're saying is like, which I agree with, is that we get an idea of who God is from a picture of our fathers, then his picture of God is an overarching villain.
Yeah.
Controlling, wants to, you know, put the world under his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of like saying the everyman needs to rebel against that. So that's really interesting.
Well, I mean, and as the head of Octan and stuff, I would say that most people, I really hate making generalizations lots of times,
right?
But conceptually, there's lots of people who can't relate to God the Father because of their human father.
Yeah.
And they don't, and because of the way that humans act when they see human justice, or they see, you know, human power, or human abuse, and that's the only way that they can understand God, and they think God is the same way, I completely understand why they don't want to believe in that God.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the thing. If Lord Business or the man upstairs is what Finn would assume is God, then I would assume that Finn would see God the same way. Mm-hmm. If someone's like, oh, God's just like your dad. And you're like, mm-hmm. oh, he's restrictive. You know, he's like I said, he's like the Octan Corporation. You know, he tries to keep us in a box. He has all these rules. He basically just doesn't want me to have fun. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's where unfortunately, the father metaphor breaks down. Hopefully, we'll see more of the father with, like, the embrace and the reconciliation and the, you know, encouragement to, you know, be creative and awesome.
Well, and it's interesting that in the end, the father figure, which is Lord Business and President Business, whatever aspect you want to see him in, Finn redeems him and has him be redeemed in the end. And so it's almost like that was the whole point. You know, you can argue that just by way of the story going when he makes up with his dad and, you know, has that kind of real life interaction between Finn and his dad. Then the story finally ends because now he's decided to redeem his father. He's cool with what his father has decided to, you know, make a change. But it kind of seems like all along that's his idea or his hope is that, you know, because with the idea of him playing with his father's quote unquote toys, anyway, it's just to say, look, Dad, you know, this can be better than you're making it. You know, look how fun this can be. This is a toy and that can be a good thing. And so in the end, it's like he always wanted that idea of his father, and then therefore what we're saying in the outside, look at this, God the Father, to be redeemed. They want something, and I think, you know, with just kind of having to make a generalization, you know, I think most people would hope that God is something better than what a flawed father figure can sometimes be. And then what we see in the world and the devastation and tragedy and that is just inherently a part of this world. I would hope that, and I would think that people would want the idea of God to be what we actually believe God is in the Bible, in Scripture. And that is that this idea of an oppressive father figure is not what God is, and that that idea of that oppressive father figure can be redeemed if you know, you know, the true God of the Bible and that kind of thing.
Our impression of the real true God, the one that we recognize in the Scripture, is a bit more like Finn himself and as a whole, because, you know, in the construct of his Lego world, he has, you know, justice in a manner of speaking. The good guys are, you know, doing noble things, sacrificial things. They're looking out for each other. They're expressing love, if you will, and in sacrifice, and even sometimes, you know, some level of humility, which children can understand when Wildstyle has to humble herself to accept that she is not the one the prophecy is all about. And when Vitruvius knows how to die well, you know, that's another good example. You know, Emmett is willing to sacrifice his own life for his friends, the ones he loves. And, you know, the Bible has a lot of high praise for someone who can do that. And then, you know, I don't want to move away from the question, but if I can, let me express how I see it apart from the filter of the question.
Okay.
If I had to sum up the storyline for myself, this was the takeaway I got from the Lego movie. There is this palpable metaphor here that I appreciate. There's many levels to it, but this is the part that really stands out to me. The son of the man upstairs is the intercessor, while Emmett is calling others to follow the example of the creator and his son combined. It's not an intentional allegory, but there is enough material here to suggest that it might have been. And can it be a coincidence that there is a visible world and an invisible world in the Lego movie? Can there be a coincidence that there is a physical conflict that's a reflection of a transcendent spiritual one? I think that there is more substance to this movie than many Christian films, and that's good because it's a great story for its creativity, entertainment value, and the overall message. By way of forgiveness and a loving relationship, the story delivers reconciliation in an incredibly relatable fashion.
Yeah, they do. They made a lot of daring choices, and I like that. It's hard not to not like about the movie. And one of them is that they really went head on with a lot of that religious kind of allegory. I mean, maybe some of it was unintentional, but a lot of it was intentional because a lot about this movie is very intentional. I mean, most everything is very intentional. And so that kind of idea of an upstairs. I mean, they call him the man upstairs. I mean, that's what they name the character, the writers. So, you know, that's a very obvious religious allegory because that's what a lot of people use for as the term for God. Oh, the man upstairs. You know, so I think it is in a lot of ways purposeful, and I think it does serve this idea of you know, kind of redemption that they're going for, and just people's ideologies. I think they use a kind of a ultimately maybe a universalistic view of things, but nonetheless, it does touch on a lot of that. You know, what we see as the real invisible world and the real world.
Well, here's the thing too, and this goes back again to like, why does this podcast exist?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like lots of times, especially when we see lots of real rich themes in the movies that we review, we're like, man, did they do this on purpose? Or did they, know what they're doing? Mm-hmm. And I would say, for the most part, no, they don't know what they're doing. But yes, they do know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So it is, and it isn't. Because Because conceptually...
It is and it isn't a prophecy.
I mean, like... If we believe that we're all created in God's image and God desires some of these things in their purest form, you know, justice and sacrifice, love, then we're all created with these desires. So the reason this movie connects with people, I mean, it's incredibly funny, but it connects with us because it has these themes that we can all get on board with, you know, sacrifice, you know, the every man, under like being told who he truly is, in his creation and his potential, and being willing to live in that, not in like a Joel Osteen kind of way, but like, you know, just an understanding of who he is. Mm-hmm. We love the idea of community. We love the idea of working together, but we love the idea of being creative. We love the idea to. That there's something about us that makes us unique. Like all these themes that push their way into this movie. I don't think you need to try to make a Christian movie or a spiritual movie. Right. Like no. You just need to make a movie that's going to connect with people, and it's going to connect, not because people are Christian or, mm-hmm. but because everybody, whether they believe they are or not, are made in the image of a creator who values these things.
That's the great flaw of the entire Christian quote unquote film.
You think that's the great flaw? Lots of great flaws.
There's a lot of great flaws, yes. But to point out one great flaw is to say that if I label this as Christian, that means I have it right. And I think it this movie, especially, I mean, you look at all the, you know, there's been a lot of good animated films of the past few years, past decade with Pixar and everything, and they've done a lot of good stuff and had a lot of good themes, but I can't think of one that really tackles just the natural themes of like what it's like to be a human and be in a world that you know, there's different cultures and there's, I don't know, that's a very broad point, but to bring it back to a bit more of a pinpoint is that, you know, a lot of what Christian films do is say the Christian idea is right, and so we're going to point that out for Christians and put it in a Christian film and only harp on only point out the Christian themes, and everything else just kind of falls by the wayside. When you have somebody who's just being a daring creator, I think that's closer to what what God is than to say that this is a Christian film and these are Christian themes and this is what you should believe and this is what a film should look like and what story should look like. So, because we're all, you know, I believe we're creations, okay? And so I believe that there is a creator. And so we're, that I'm made in the image of that creator. And so...
We're master builder.
We're master builder. Whatever you want to call it. And so, I mean, you know, if I believe that, then I want to, then I'm going to believe that creation is, well, to say that, like, kind of like imitation is a serious form of flattery. If I want to be like God, I want to go out and create. That's one aspect of him that I want to go and do. And I think that this movie is bold in its creation. And I think that that's a very, it's going to naturally, because they went boldly into themes of humanity and themes that just kind of talk about the nature of life. Since they did that, they're going to hit right where God is, you know, in his creation and what he does and his truth. And so that is better to me than, or it is more Christ-like than making something and discounting a lot of things to whittle it down to a specific thing. So, and this movie is kind of the best of what we can get from movies, I think. I mean, that's what, this movie is a very, very, very good movie. And it's not just, you know, what it seems like on the surface, which is just fantastic. I mean, I'm just blown away by the idea of like the father-son thing and really them looking at the idea of creation and imagination from a child's perspective and from an adult perspective and kind of weighing those two worlds and crashing them in together. It was great.
What I like about the Lego world is how that they have seemingly done the impossible by using such a wide variety of cultural things as a part of a unified whole, because nothing in the Lego world is fictitious. That's fictitious here. There, they have cities and the Old West and fantasy lands, superheroes, science fiction, you know, elements like Star Wars characters. They all coexist, all jam-packed into the one comedic epic, charmingly working together. It's a melting pot of creative memes, and yet they're all accepted as part of reality. There's no difference between fiction and reality. Which kind of brings you, well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, what you're saying is basically what Lego is. I mean, like,
right.
We're talking about toys, you know, like we're talking about toys when we started the conversation. It's like the reason why Lego continues on is because it embraces any type of creation and fantasy and allows you to live that more than any other toy line can. I mean, there's specific toy lines for specific brands, but there's not really many other toy lines or really any other toy line, especially that does it like Lego, but not really any other toy lines that lets you play in the world of all the different types of worlds you want to be in. I mean, you can go Lord of the Rings, you can go Back to the Future, you can go dinosaurs, castles, you can do anything. Spaceship! Spaceship!
We need TJ on the podcast to do some shouting, like, you know, he's the space 1980s spaceship guy.
Yeah. But that's, you know, that's, so what you're saying, I just wanted to point, that's Lego. I mean, that is the essence of, that's what makes Lego so great.
You wanted to talk about any of the other theological implications or other worldview aspects. We've touched a lot on the Christian, you know, symbology. And you mentioned earlier, Mark, that it had ultimately a universalist perspective. I'm curious, do we have time to go into that and just highlight some of the earmarks there and why we feel that way or why you felt that way?
If you want to, you can go ahead. But it'll probably be the last thing we do before we wrap up.
I'll try to make my observations super brief.
Do it in the and we're running out of time, so I'm going to give you a list of things that you need to be on the lookout for.
Okay, yeah, well, number one, there isn't any religiosity portrayed in the film. There aren't churches in the Lego City. There's no, you know, there's no world with Bible characters or something like that. Not that I'm suggesting that they do that. I don't know how Christians would take to a Lego set that was like King David and, you know, versus King Saul or something like that.
They would buy the hell out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see a Noah's Ark. That's my dream Lego set.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that'd be fun.
But yeah, there was that moment where Vitruvius says, I know that sounds like a cat poster, And then when you get to the cat poster, the whole reason that Emmett needs to see that poster is that it's the cat with his arms up saying, believe, just believe. And that's an essence of like, it doesn't matter what you believe in, where you derive your confidence, why you want to accomplish what you want to accomplish. You got to commit yourself to that. And whatever that ideal is, that is the ultimate. That is what is transcendent. What is it to you? There's that moment also when Vitruvius earlier is talking to Emmett on the their Old West cart that is spinning out of control, led by the pigs. And Vitruvius, no, it's not that moment. It's later when they're building the submarine, and Vitruvius is talking to Emmett again, and he says, Emmett, you don't need to worry about what the other people are doing to build their part of the submarine. You just need to add something special to the submarine that is unique about you. It's all about what makes you special. Don't think about other people. Don't think about, you know what they're up to and whether or not it matters. Decide for yourself that what you're doing matters. Have your own self-sustaining purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'm not trying to lambast the film. I'm not trying to insult the film.
It's
there. It's present in the film, and this is not unique to the Lego Movie. We see this in a lot of family films.
Well, it does. I think the Lego Movie does what... And this is apt because it's very parallel to this, but it does what The Matrix does. And there's a lot of similarities to The Matrix as there are with the Lego Movie. And you could go into all those, they both live in a world that's constructed by, that is a construct. And, there's a bunch of like visual similarities where the things in the end look like the squids from The Matrix, but The Matrix kind of takes a universal perspective of religion and kind of incorporates it into the ideology of the film. And I think the Lego film does that incidentally, just because there's different types of, just brands and cultures kind of coming into this world that is built here, but also purposefully, because I think they're trying to make this kind of overarching idea of like another world, the man upstairs, and they don't really ever define it. And then, this kind of regular world and dystopian era, what all that means. There's a lot of religious symbolism in here. I think that's just not really touched on. It's like you said, it's empty a little bit, but it does in that way, like The Matrix does.
Well, what it reminds me of is something that we touched on, I think, almost a year ago, when we reviewed Serenity,
mm-hmm.
and we had Shepherd Book's last words before he passed,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, just have faith.
Yeah, I don't care what kind of faith you have, just have faith.
Yeah, he's like, why do you always assume I'm talking about religion or whatever?
Yeah,
he's like, I don't care what it is, just have faith in something.
Yeah,
and even though it's supposed to sound like this incredibly encouraging and deep thought, it ends up being probably one of the most shallow thoughts in the entire film. And what I hear you saying, Joe, and if you are, then I agree with it, mm-hmm. is, they go through and like the impetus at the very end of this film is like, believe
right.
in something.
Yeah.
You know, and it's billed as the most important thing, but it actually is probably the shallowest part, especially after all the things that we've talked about already.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it stinks that we see this repeatedly in a number of movies. But when you're going to make a movie for everybody,
I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. I think an everyman perspective for a story is necessary.
Well, it's why I would encourage everyone to engage the films.
Right.
That you're watching.
Yeah, I don't.
So you don't just leave it hanging.
Films. Yeah, we tend to, and not we on the show, but like we in general, just as an audience, just try to. Sometimes we think that movies need to have a lot of answers, and they're better at asking questions, and they should be asking more questions than giving answers.
Well, and in this movie especially, and I wish we had all the time in the world.
Yeah,
but we don't.
We don't.
So, I know there's things that we've missed. I know there's things that we didn't have to talk near as much as we wanted to.
Yeah.
But we are going to kind of start wrapping it up. So we've all talked about how we love this movie. But, Joe, is there anything that would make your list of kind of like, come on, moments, or just things that you didn't like?
Yes. I have thought long and hard about this, and the only dislike that I have is that there wasn't enough Superman. I'm a huge Superman fan. I would like to see more of Superman in a sequel, and I think that they could play up some banter between Superman and Batman, paralleling the Superman versus Batman film.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Sure.
There you
go. All right, Mark. Mark didn't have many sad things to say about this one.
I really had a problem coming up with something like sad. You know, we always have the come on, man moments, but I really didn't necessarily have one. Even though I love this part, the only thing that I was kind of like, wait, come on, you know, was that, you know, so good cop, bad cop, like he could have just drawn his face on the whole time. I mean, he could have just like been talking as good cop again.
It was a simple mark.
I know. You know, and I think, you know, some things were a little easy, but it's still, that's kind of part of the tone of the film. So I don't know that I ever, fully bought into President Business being all of that sinister, except for when he glued the people down. So there was just some moments where I was like, maybe this is a little too easy. But it's just such a almost a flawless film. It's so clever and so well written, so well made. It's hard to point out flaws. I know that's like kind of cliche to say or something.
Well, I mean, but it's a movie we love. Really, it's harder movie to find.
Yeah.
And so, I would say this. Mark, you mentioned way earlier in the podcast about how they mess with a lot of kind of rules for the worlds. I think the only thing that bothered me, which again is nitpicking at this point, mm-hmm. is Emmett's ability to move when he's in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Because Emmett, like the thing I loved about Emmett's world was it's completely Finn's imagination.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, it's not his imagination anymore. It actually becomes like almost like a supernatural kind of thing.
Yeah, they did have some like... How does this actually... Yeah, there's some cheats. How does this actually work? You could chalk that up. I think you could chalk that up to like maybe, you know, we're seeing it as Emmett moving.
Yeah.
But in reality, maybe it could have been like the wind blew the piece over or something like that. And I don't know.
But yeah, nitpicking. So... You know, I like the whole live action part of it.
I did too. Yeah.
So we're ending on a positive note. So Joe, if it's possible, you know, in 1 to 3, you know, examples, what's your favorite part of this movie? Your favorite moments?
Really loved Emmett's morning, getting up and getting ready to start his day at the beginning of the film. I really enjoyed the whole calamity that the 80s spaceship guy experiences when he's trying to get the super smart computer at Octane Corporation to work for him and it will not obey his orders. And it finally listens to Metalbeard when he says, "Hear ye, open the yonder gate," or something like that, and suddenly the machine understands him. And thirdly, just I love anything and everything from Liam Neeson's performance as good cop and bad cop. How he totally captured like an essence of hysterical comedy I was not expecting out of him or for the character. Darn, you know, yeah. All of his moments was just incredible. I didn't see it coming from Liam Neeson.
You do a good Liam Neeson impression.
Yeah.
I do a great bad cop impersonation. Sorry.
What is it? It's like the one thing where Liam Neeson goes into the guy's room and says like, "Oh, I want to do comedy."
Oh yeah, from Extras.
Yeah, Extras.
Yeah, with Ricky Gervais.
That clip is so funny.
That's so funny.
Joe. When I had the epiphany actually right before this show that Liam Neeson was also good cop. I completely let that slip my mind. Like, he is so obviously bad cop. I forgot that he's the voice. I mean, like, because I would never, ever expect that voice to come out of Liam Neeson's mouth.
I know.
So that's so great. all right, so Mark, try to narrow it down.
I don't even know how. Like, everything about this movie really is great. And it's so clever, and it has something for everybody. I love Batman in this movie. I'm a Batman fan, but like to kind of point, like poke fun at like the Batman that is right now in the current culture. And yeah, I mean, like the moment where he's like throws a bunch of batarangs and he's like, Kazam! Pa-pow! Ka-pow! And he misses it every time. And then he finally hits it. And he's like, first time. Yeah, it's, I mean, just his kind of like ego is just such a blast. And
his song,
oh, you know, and everything, like, darkness. You know, it's like they're, you know, they're like putting things together. He's like, anybody have any black pieces? I only work with black and sometimes very, very dark gray. Like, it just, and, they're out on the, like, they're out on the water and he's like, you know, he's like, you know, how bad of a suntan am I going to get? Sunburn am I going to get? Not one, because I'm wearing latex, but you guys are going to have a bad, like, I mean, I don't know. It's really great, and how they kind of bring all the elements together. And I love Superman and Green Lantern, how it was Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill interacting with each other. It was just one. I'm missing a whole bunch of things because I can't even think. There's so many good things. I really, on a personal level, really just enjoyed that kind of like it being Finn, that reveal of the real world, and just how it was his imagination the whole time. Really kind of hit me at that like kid level. You know, kind of misty-eyed moment for me was just wonderful. I really enjoyed that a lot. It's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant movie.
It did that to me, too. Yeah, that was powerful.
Well, I would say that, I mean, I feel like I could kind of hit on things like you guys. Like, there's so many quotable lines. There's so many great jokes in this movie. So just all of that.
Yeah.
All right? Roll that up into one thing. If there's something, like a funny line that you can think of from this movie right now, listener, that's what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? The other thing that I just thought was impressive was that another one of those fun facts about the movie is that except for like Lord Business's like hairpiece or something like that, everything in this movie was an actual Lego piece.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it was actually a real, I mean, obviously it was CGI, but they used, you know, real Lego pieces, like, you know, like the laser beams or actually little lightsaber sticks.
Yeah.
You know, so it was modeled on real stuff.
Even the simplest things, like when he was in the shower, like the suds and the water.
All
and,
that.
Yeah.
Like, that right there, I think, was a commitment level that took this movie to the next level.
Yeah.
That commitment right there was so impressive to me. I loved watching, being immersed in that world. So, that was probably my favorite thing. So, to wrap up, Joe, any final thoughts?
Nothing. No, thank you. I guess what we have summed up has been very nice.
Like I said, I think about like 10 minutes ago, you had a great final thought. I was like, oh man, you skipped forward to final thought.
Can I just ask one question then?
Sure.
Okay, so I don't know why the Kraggle blows up in the top of the flying tower at the end when President Business puts the piece of resistance on the top of the tube. Any guesses there?
Because the prophecy said it might happen.
Okay. Because that was the best excuse I could come up with.
And you might
explode. Because movie magic. Because, you know, whatever. It's imagination.
Yeah. I don't know. Because I think even Emmett or some character brings it up, but it's easy to overlook in the film. Like, right after he does it, you're expecting a lot of calm and serenity. Like, now let's move on. But right after he snaps on the cap, it blows up for no apparent reason. But it was just a tube of crazy glue. So, whatever.
Because imagination,
yeah, sure.
Yes.
So, Mark, final thoughts on the movie?
It's really brilliant. And I think it's kind of like one of those modern classics. You know, we need like a, you know, a few years of like, you know, looking back and watching this movie a couple of times to really continue to appreciate it and for it to become a classic. I mean, there's not a whole lot that you can criticize about this movie because of what you're saying, that level of dedication that they took to it. And so, you know, they do tackle some interesting themes, some deep themes and all, but it's just a fun movie. Like, everything that they do is done so well, and including all of these, you know, cultural icons like Batman, Superman, all these guys. I mean, they all work really well. I was super impressed with how well done this movie was. It blew me away. And so go out and make all your friends watch it who haven't seen it.
Yep.
Griffin,
I can say if you haven't seen it, I would definitely recommend it. And for my final thoughts, I will leave you with the wisdom of Metalbeard's five laws of the sea, which are: never place your rear end on a pirate's face, never release a kraken,
never
put ye hand in a clam's mouth, always abandon a lost cause, and never wear a dress on Tuesday.
Amen.
So, so with that, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to be on the show. It's always great to incorporate new people. Joe, your first time on the show. Awesome job. So how can people find what you're doing on the interwebs and other places?
Thank you for also having me on the show. I've been looking forward to it for a long time. I really enjoyed this. Find me at joedarnell.com and on Twitter, I'm _JoeDarnell.
Okay.
All right.
And Mark?
I am, of course, at Twitter. I'm Mark Wingdinger. And I am writing a lot on the internet. You can find me on Real World Theology primarily. I'm a script writer, so I write a lot in the dark in my home and my office and stuff. So I'll be doing a lot of that, and I'm doing a lot of that right now, which is great. But always enjoy being on the show, and I'll see you next time I'm on the show.
Whenever that is,
probably next one. I don't know.
Well, if you want to keep the discussion going, then please follow at Real World Theo on Twitter, or you can follow me at Physification. If you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, then visit our website at realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L worldtheology.com. Connect with us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you enjoy it, please, please, please review the show.
Yeah.
Mark?
Sorry.
Yeah.
How do you know I haven't done it?
I'm pretty sure you haven't.
No, you don't know. Hey, Joe's following me on Twitter now. Just like that.
Magical. Review the show. I really appreciate it. Leave us some feedback. Tell your friends, and let's get more people involved in the conversation. And on that note, I do want to send a big thank you out to Joshua Cribb, which I'm pretty sure is a misspelling of his actual name, for his 5-star review on iTunes. He said some ridiculously awesome things about the show and me personally. So I'm pretty sure he was lying, but I'll take it. So... Yeah. Again, I just want to thank my guests for being here. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Everything is awesome. Thanks, listeners, because everything is awesome.
Everything is cool when you're part of the team.
I can't even get through this anymore.
Everything is awesome.
All right. Remember, story is powerful, and entertainment is awesome.
It's awesome.
Bye-bye.
Also not mindless.
Bye.
Good night.
This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com.